The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to Commentary from the Edge. I'm your host, Elbert Lewis. Today my rant is entitled Idiocracy and Reality. Now, this rant came to me in a very unusual way. I was looking at a program I recorded a week ago, and it was an episode of Criminal Minds. You know, I never got into that program when it first aired, and so I've got about 10 years of episodes I have to catch up on. So the episode ended, and I deleted it. And the TV was on this cable station. I don't know how it got there. Perhaps I was channel surfing, or perhaps my wife. But there was this movie playing, and it was called Idiocracy. And I looked at a couple of seconds of it, and I thought, why in the world would someone make a movie that is so stupid and so obviously a grade Z movie? I mean, the acting was terrible. The scenes were just... I mean, a kindergartner could have made more realistic stage props and background scenery. It was so bad and so obviously ridiculous, I couldn't turn away. I couldn't turn it off. And then I realized that it was a commentary on what our country could look like if we continued down the track that we're on. Now, let me describe some of the scenes or some of the plot lines in this movie. Number one, corporations owned everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Not only did they own the companies and corporations that deliver food and goods and services, they owned the government, including the military. They own the media and the press. They were just totally in charge. And they had duped everyone. They had pretty much dumbed down the society to the point where people believed almost anything they told them. And the majority of the population, they were just mindless consumers. Now, doesn't that sound like mindless, die-hard Democrats or Republicans who never question candidates with their party affiliation and who vote a straight Democratic or Republican ticket every election? You know the type of person I'm speaking of. One of them might be staring back at you when you look in the mirror every day. Another plot line. The productive people, the smart people, the educated people, the intelligent people weren't having babies. They illustrated this with this couple. Power couple, right? Both college educated, career minded. And the first scene, or the first interview, they were postponing having kids because they had just got out of college, you know, and their careers are getting started. They interviewed them 5 years later, and they're still working on their careers. They have these lofty goals. They're still traveling and seeing the world. And so kids don't quite fit in right now. They interviewed them 5 or 10 more years later, and they come up with even more academic or social reasons why they shouldn't have kids at this time in their lives. And you can see the progression where this is going. They interviewed them now. They're in their late 40s and 50s. Now they want kids and they can't have kids. It's kind of eerie, though, but I just heard a news clip where some study, I believe it came out of Europe, where they tracked this large number of women, and they found that the more intelligent a woman is, the fewer kids she has. Back to the movie. In contrast to that, they showed this other couple, dumb as rocks, probably didn't finish high school, totally unproductive, you know the type. You might even have some in your family. They were having kids like rabbits. They were breeding all over the place, 10 or 12 kids per family. The government was incentivizing them to have more kids. Why? Because corporations ran the government and the corporations needed consumers. And so they were having all these kids and guess what? The kids were dumb as rocks just like the parents. But it suited the corporations because that's what they needed. Now, does this seem reminiscent of what's going on with the controversy over illegal immigration where the corporations want cheap labor? And they're willing to subvert national security and lessen white political power at the ballot box in order to get that cheap labor from south of the border, all to increase their profit margins. Another plot line in the movie was the farming. The corporations were so powerful, so entrenched, so all-inclusive or all-controlling in people's lives that they had convinced the farmers to irrigate their crops with Gatorade. They had convinced them that through the media and through science programs and through the government edicts and publications that the crops needed the electrolytes and Gatorade more than they did water. And they were irrigating their farms with Gatorade. And guess what? The crops were dying. And these people were on the verge of starvation because they were just so indoctrinated, so brainwashed by the media that they were watering their plants with Gatorade. To them, not only were they watering their plants, but everybody was drinking Gatorade. And it was so perverted that the only thing they would use water is to flush toilets. Because there was such a small profit margin in water, the all-powerful corporations had bamboozled nearly the entire population into believing the only thing water was good for was flushing toilets. And maybe I should go back to the premise, to the outline premise of the story. That was this soldier. He was part of an experiment, and they were testing suspended animation. It was a soldier and a prostitute, because they wanted a soldier and an ordinary citizen. Why they chose a prostitute, I don't know. I missed the first few minutes of it. Something went wrong, and somehow they wound up 400 years in the future. And that's when this scenario is taking place. Corporations are pretty much taking over everything, and they have dumbed everybody down to the point where everybody in office, including the presidents, the senators, the congressmen, they're all idiots. They're all inbred idiots, or they're bought and paid for by the corporations. And they have mandated everyone take an intelligence test. And this guy, who was just an average Joe, he wasn't the brightest soldier you'd ever see in uniform. He was just an average guy. But when he took the IQ test, then it turned out he was the smartest person in the world. The corporate-controlled public education system has so dumbed down the population. This ordinary average soldier from the past took the IQ test, and he turned out to be the smartest person in the world. There was this underground movement who were opposed to the corporations, their power, and they kept trying to put him in charge because the test showed that he was the smartest person in the world. The world is on the verge of collapse. They're almost starving. He was going to be the person who saved mankind. The first thing they wanted to do is tackle was the crop problem. And he was just astounded to find out that these people are irrigating their crops with Gatorade. And he said, well, all you got to do is use water. Plants need water. But to them, no. You know, the media is telling them, corporations is telling them, the government is telling them that the crops need the electrolyte in Gatorade. And his people were damn near starving, and they couldn't see it. And I thought, what a stupid movie. I mean, yeah, I understand where they're going with this. I understand what they're saying. But that would never happen in real life, would it? And then you know what happened? The next day, I saw an article, or I should say an editorial, in my local newspaper. The headline read, "Banks Need Dose of Discipline." And I thought, this seems interesting. I started reading, and I immediately flashed back to this movie. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. And you know, the premise of this editorial is that just like before the Great Depression, back in the 1910s and 19-teens and 20s, one of the things that brought about that Great Depression was all the huge banks. They owned just about everything. They owned the railroads. They owned the industrial companies. Heck, they owned Wall Street, as far as that goes. And all the finagling and the financial wheeling and dealing and cheating and conniving that went on resulted in the great stock market crash and the Great Depression. Now, to assure that that wouldn't happen again, our government enacted a lot of legislation. One was the Glass-Steagall Act, and that prevented banks from taking part in other corporate enterprises, such as industry and railroads and airlines and things like that, because they felt if you let banks do that, then they will form these huge conglomerates and you will have a lot of collusion and price fixing that will control just about everything in our lives. The Glass-Steagall Act was just one of many antitrust laws that were passed. Well, guess what? Our government repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. We have our illustrious president thinking with the small head, Bill Clinton, to thank for that. And 10 or so years after the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, we have the great subprime mortgage debacle, what some were calling Armageddon, financial Armageddon, to the point where the government had to come up with almost $1 trillion to prevent, they said, the whole financial structure in this country from coming apart. And now, as a result of this, we got through that. But guess what? That wasn't the end of it. In fact, there is something even more insidious taking place. Well, let me read you something from the article, and I quote, "Today, large, complex, opaque, and diverse corporations are no longer called trusts. Instead, we have financial holding companies, large conglomerates combining banks and trading firms, power plants, oil refiners, warehouses, shipping firms, and mining companies." Close quote. In other words, thanks to what our government has done, they have allowed the banks to resume their activities that led to the Great Depression. They don't call them trusts anymore. They call them something else, financial holding companies. But they're doing basically the same thing. Let me quote further. "The floodgates opened some 16 years ago with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. In addition to combining commercial banking with insurance and investment banking, the new law also allowed banks to trade in commodities and to engage in a variety of non-financial activities. The result of that is the 6 largest U.S. bank holding companies now own 14,420 subsidiaries, of which only 19 are traditional banks. The rest of those 14,400 subsidiaries are all kinds of different companies that are involved in all kinds of industries. And these 6 large banks control those subsidiaries. They have the power to set policy, to set prices, and to engage in price fixing, to manufacture shortages, to drive up the prices, to do almost anything. And the banks are doing it with our money, our deposits, the profits they make from us. They're using our money to control what the cost of living will be. And our government, the people who run our government, are allowing this to happen. Now, will it get to the point or to the degree that was depicted in that movie Idiocracy? I don't know. But it was just eerie to me how that movie Idiocracy and reality are like running in the same stream. It's kind of scary. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking right about now, that I'm being paranoid, that I'm an alarmist, a doomsayer, and this podcast is more like commentary from the edge of sanity. And you're thinking that the people we elect to run the government would never let something like that happen, that those are people we elect, we trust in them, they have our best interests at heart, right? It's the other guy's candidate, or it's the other party. That's the problem. And as soon as we get our guy in the White House, or as soon as our guys control Congress, and everything will be fine, we'll fix the problem. Well, a day or so after I saw the article on the banks, there was another article in my local newspaper again. And the headline of this article is, "Corruption is currency of our capital." Guess what, people? politicians, no matter what party you belong to, no matter what your affiliation, no matter what your philosophy, the politicians you support and you vote for time after time after time, they're all in this together. If they're not on the take, then they're part of the problem because they don't expose the graft and the corruption. If they had any shred of decency and patriotism, that's what they would do. Let me read some parts of this editorial. And I quote, "If you are trying to understand why Washington works so badly for the rest of the country, this book that the author mentioned says that it works extremely well for important citizens, the lobbyists. The permanent government of the United States is no longer defined by a party or a branch, but by the profession, comfortably encamped around the federal coffers." Close quote. In other words, people, our government is pretty much being ran by the lobbyists, who are the point men for the corporations. Just as an example, in the mid-1950s, there were 5,000 registered lobbyists in Washington. Today, there are more than 12,000. But that's not the end of the story, because there are several thousands more shadow lobbyists. They don't call themselves lobbyists. They call themselves consultants, strategic advisors, and just people who are quote-unquote concerned civic nonprofit organizations. And these people have at their disposal $3.5 billion annually to throw at our elected representatives and our elected office holders to bribe them into tailoring and shaping legislation that are beneficial to the lobbyists and their clients. That's how Washington is ran today. And when I think back on that movie, the politicians in that movie were all jokes. And it just so happens the president was a black man, and he was an absolute fool. His cabinets, all the elected officials, bought and paid for, and they were all idiots. They all looked like they had been inbred for 4 or 5 generations. When you consider all that is happening today, it seems that we are on the fast track to the situation that was depicted in this movie. Now, some of you might be doubting what I'm saying now, but this guy wrote a book, and it's called The Town. I haven't read the book. The author is Mark Leibovich, and I do plan on reading it because, according to this guy that wrote the editorial, this book, who's supposedly the number one best-selling political book of the summer, is all the rage in Washington, that people are reading it, and I'm sure the people who are being written about don't appreciate it. But every American, every thinking, voting, tax-paying American probably should read this book. And this guy who wrote the article goes on to say, and I quote, "Lobbyists today hold the keys to what everyone in government, senator, elected official, or staffer, is secretly searching for, a post-government source of income. Back in the 70s, only 3% of retiring members of Congress became lobbyists. Today, 42% of retiring members of the House go on to be lobbyists, and 50% of senators." Do you understand what that means? That at least half of the people in Congress right now are there for the money. The decisions they make, the votes they cast, the laws they pen and pass are designed to line their own pockets, to make themselves wealthy. It's not, this country is not being run for our benefit, the citizens, the taxpayers. This government is being run for the benefit of the people we elect. We stupidly elect election cycle after election cycle to go back to Washington to line their own pockets at our expense. Republican, Democrat, a Libertarian, Green, Independent, it makes no difference. They're all bought and paid for. I did a rough calculation. If the lobbyists are spending $3.5 billion a year in lobbying efforts in Washington, by the way, that's just the amount of money that's actually reported, the legal bribes. I added up the number of elected officials in Washington. The House of Representatives is 400-something. I rounded that up to 500. And you add the 100 senators. And you can probably throw the president and the VP in there too. So roughly 600 people, and you divide that into 3.5 billion. That's roughly $5.8 million a year per elected official in our federal government. That's how much the lobbyists, the corporations, the fat cats, even probably foreign governments, that's how much money is being spent every year. Nearly $6 million per congressman or senator or president in lobbying efforts to get them to pass legislation that is favorable to the lobbyists, their employers, or their special interest groups. Failing that, then to grant them exceptions to any legislation they don't agree with. How in the hell can we compete with that? The answer is we can't. This government of the United States is a runaway train driven by a corrupt engineer, conductors that are on the take, and a brakeman who's just waiting to get paid. We the people, the taxpaying citizens of America, heck, we're just along for the ride on this trip from reality to idiocracy. Until next time, I'm your host, Elbert Lewis, from The Edge.